sports and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics.
I know you think that you know this is a familiar voice, but it's not the most familiar voice that you've been listening to. I am JT, a.k.a. the Master. Mr. FSP, Mr. Vic Gardner, is away on an obligation that he has to fulfill for this weekend. And instead, it is my privilege to join you this Saturday, Eastern Standard Time, 1 p.m. as always, to be the host with the most on the FSP show. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. And like I always say, it's the place to be if you want to talk to me. We have a chat room laid up there for you. If you want to put your knowledge in that chat room, make a comment, do some type of statement. You do what you do. You can do it in that chat room if you'd rather not dial that number I just gave you and actually talk to me. Well, this weekend is a very interesting weekend. We got four games, and we're getting closer to that magical game that we call the Super Bowl. We got eight teams left. Two games on Saturday starting at 4:30. Two games on Sunday starting at 1 o'clock. Depending on if you're a fan of either of those teams, depending if you're a fan of the teams that are playing on Saturday, or the teams that are playing on Sunday, or you're just a football fan and you're excited about what the possibility may be of who gets that next chance to go to the either AFC Championship or the NFC Championship. And quite naturally, like I said prior, eventually two contenders to go to the Super Bowl. We still have the Super Bowl champion from last year, the Seattle Seahawks, still sitting there at the number one seed in the NFC, playing I apologize to Carolina Panther fans that are listening, the lowly Carolina Panther fans that have to go up to Seattle and play the number one seed. By all intents and purposes, with the opinion of people, the so-called experts, and I always say the so-called experts, say that's going to be the worst game of the weekend because these two teams don't put up crazy numbers when they go against each other. Well, the simple fact is Seattle has a very good defense. Carolina has a very bad offense. Carolina has a decent defense, and Seattle's offense is not a juggernaut, not very explosive. They rely on the run game, which eats up a lot of clock and has a tendency to, when it eats up a lot of clock, just like Carolina, who likes to run the ball, you tend to have a low-scoring game. So, it is what it is, but like I said, I'm going to be breaking down each one of these games, breaking down the first game, which is the Seattle Seahawks versus the hold on a minute, man. I could be mistaken. Not the first or last time. So give me a minute here. I'm sorry. The first game is at 4:35, which will be the Baltimore Ravens visiting the New England Patriots. And if I was a New England Patriot fan and a member of the New England Patriots, now you all heard on whatever talk show you listen to, whatever show you listen to, whether it's on ESPN, NFL Network, or even some of these other shows, or even online in CBS or whatever, or NFL.com, that the players look forward to the challenge. I'm talking about in New England and Baltimore, of facing each other with the chance of going to the AFC Championship. Well, I could tell you that the New England Patriots, in my opinion, really don't want to see the Baltimore Ravens, who's beat them two of the last three times they've played in the playoffs. Baltimore went through New England 2 years ago in New England to win the Super Bowl in 2012. So Tom Brady has problems, for the most part, playing the Baltimore Ravens. And it doesn't make a difference whether doesn't make a difference for the Baltimore Ravens to be on the road. Joe Flacco, Joe Cool, plays very well on the road. And I would think that this should be no different. I know that the Patriots' defense is a lot better, especially in the secondary, with Brandon Browner and Darrell Revis, and they have been better against the pass rush, and for the last 2 or 3 weeks, at least, they've been better against the run. So what's that saying? Joe Flacco may not have the same success as in the past. They last two times that the New England Patriots have faced the Baltimore Ravens, Gronk didn't play either one of these games. I would think he would play a huge role in this game, as long as he's healthy enough to play. So let's look at this lineup of the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens. Let's go that route first and see what we can come up with. New England starting lineup, and I'm just going to go with the still skill players on the Patriots side of the ball. And it's like this, starting with the man that touches the ball on every down and on the offense. We're talking about Tom Brady. Talking about Tom Brady. He threw a score in every game this year until the last game. But he's only managed one or two scores in 11 games, including the final 6 weeks. His yardage has been high in home games, and his best efforts did come while at home. In my opinion, he should be a lock for two passing scores and probably high yardage this week. Let's move on to this quagmire of the running game. Baltimore Ravens are one of the best teams defending against the run. In fact, they're the best defending against the run. One of the best teams in the top five against the run. So, what's that tell you? It's going to be a passing game with the New England Patriots. You got LeGarrette Blount, who Patriots picked up later in the season. You got Jonas Gray, which you're not sure of what you're going to get from him because of the fact is they picked up LeGarrette Blount. And then you have the versatile Shane Vereen, who does a little running and is used a lot in the passing game as the running back out of the backfield catching passes, which I do believe because of how Tom Brady likes to get the ball out of his hand quickly, he's going to be used a lot. So I think Tom Brady, like I said, is going to have high yardage and throw for at least a couple scores, one of them being to Gronk, who's the other guy we were talking about, the tight end. I think he's going to play a huge part. Baltimore is about middle of the pack against tight end. And I'd move that down a couple spots, at least three or four spots, because of Gronk being who he is and how Tom Brady uses him. So two guys right off the bat. You might want to package them in your daily leagues, in FanDuel or DraftKings or what other I know there's a $2 million tournament in DraftKings, and there is a $2 million tournament in the FanDuel, if I'm not mistaken. I want to look up FanDuel right now, see what we got. And bear with me for a minute here while I look it up. And we'll see what we got. But I do believe that's what we have is bear with me for a minute, people. I'm trying to get something right here. I do believe so. Let me put it that way. You know what? I'm going to go to commercial break, get my act together here. And then we'll be back. All right, I'm going to have a couple commercials, and then we'll come right back. Here we go.
Thursday night is the right time to kick back and listen to the FSP Crew Show as they break down the weekend sports and prepare you for Thursday night football. 8 p.m. Eastern, just before the game starts, Jerry the Master Taylor hosts the show with Jeff the Joker Goldberg and Mike the Bookie Monster Wright. The three gentlemen debate and discuss a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of everything on the FSP Crew Show every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
All right, we are back. And yes, it is a $2 million tournament in FanDuel and also a $2 million tournament in DraftKings. So that's what we're doing, both of them. And I'm going to tell you my lineup as it pertains to the New England and the Baltimore Raven game. The guys I have in FanDuel that I'm using, and I think it's a good value because Joe Flacco has been doing very well, especially in the playoffs, and especially even though the improvement in the pass defense. I still like Joe Flacco. I think he's a good value at 7,800. I put him in as my starting quarterback. I used the also in that game, I have used the paired him up. And I like doing this even in fantasy football during the season. I like doing this. I don't do it all the time, but I find out that, and this is just something I've maybe stumbled upon for some reason, and I didn't pick up on it in prior years, but I like doing this. And I think it's pretty beneficial, especially if you have a very good kicker. And I think you know what I'm talking about. Taking your starting quarterback, whoever you have for that week as your starting quarterback, if you stream quarterbacks or if you happen to have a stud as a quarterback, either acquiring that kicker or maybe you draft the kicker. So what this is, in essence, this is what you have. You have the quarterback of that team, regardless of what team that it is, and in this case, it's Joe Flacco, and he has a very very good kicker, extremely reliable, solid kicker in Justin Tucker. So this is a suggestion I do. I will say to you, and this is what I like doing, and I'll be doing it in the future for sure. Taking the kicker of my starting quarterback on that team. So I get the quarterback when he throws a touchdown, or I get the quarterback putting this team in position to kick a field goal. So I benefit from both of those. Okay? I benefit both ways. That means I get the quarterback when he throws a touchdown pass, whether it's 4 or 6 points, and then I get the extra point from that same game with the kicker. Or if he doesn't get into the end zone, the field goal. So if you have Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Tony Romo, and even Cam Newton or Russell Wilson, all right? Now, some of these teams are going up stout defenses, just like Carolina and Seattle. They're pretty two stout defenses, including Baltimore. But the quarterbacks that are in this playoff run, and I named them, going today is Tom Brady, Joe Flacco, Cam Newton, and Russell Wilson. Going tomorrow, Aaron Rodgers, Tony Romo, and Andrew Luck, and Peyton Manning. Just think about this. Look at the quarterbacks. These are the top flight quarterbacks for the most part. Top tier quarterbacks. Get their teams into the end zone or in within field goal range to pick up some points. So wouldn't it make sense that because of these eight teams and their quarterbacks are able to move the ball and move the offense in scoring position, that even if they don't get into the end zone, their field goal kicker, and majority of field goal kickers are very reliable and consistent, even if you don't get the 6 points, you get 3 points. You get the 3 points. So just think about that. Think about that. And that's why I'm saying that in the future, my suggestion to you. Now, I think this is the last week from what I've heard in the advertisements that this is the last week that you can play these games in FanDuel because of the player pool is diminishing. And I guess they go up to a certain point. But I don't play him that much, but I do play him at the end of the season. I play that at the end of the season, win a little money, and I'm doing the same thing this year, trying to win a little bit of money after the regular fantasy season and the fantasy championships are over. I tried going into these websites, FanDuel, and I just trying DraftKings for the first time and see if I can generate a little more income from these sites. So would it make sense? It does to me that I'm taking the quarterback that I'm starting. I mean, I'm taking the kicker of the same team, the quarterback I'm starting. Because, like I said, if you don't get the 6 points or 4 points, and in here it's 6 points for a passing touchdown, that at least you get the benefit of the 3 points. And like I said, I'm going to be incorporating that into my fantasy strategy going forward into the fantasy football season in 2015 and on until I can think of a better way to guarantee points. So that, I'm just saying. Now let's look on the other side. Wait a minute. I'm not finished what I'm saying. Sorry. Let's look at finishing up in the New England Patriots. I got off on a tangent a little bit. I'm trying to reel myself back in. And let's talk about this. All right. Good to package up Ron Gronkowski and Tom Brady. But the thing about this, and let's go into FanDuel first. And let's look at the price tag of what Tom Brady's price tag is. If I'm not mistaken, it's $7,800. No, $9,100. And quite naturally, when I say Gronk Gronkowski, the price tag is $7,900. So you have $17,000 in a $60,000 salary cap that Gronkowski and Tom Brady are, if you decide to use them, are two big ticket items. Gronkowski is the highest rated top, the tight end, by far, not even close. Next one is Greg Olsen. And Gronkowski, like I said, is $7,900. Greg Olsen is $6,200. Big, huge $1,700 difference. Huge difference. And then from there, Jason Witten is $5,500. Julius Thomas is $5,500. Now, if it was me, it's a good play if you're willing to pay that much for your quarterback combination, quarterback and tight end. Me? I would take Tom Brady, all right, because I think Tom Brady playing at home in the playoffs is a sure bet, versus adding Gronk to that when I can have Greg Olsen or Jason Witten in it. Now, I know that last few times Greg Olsen played the Seattle Seahawks, he didn't do that well. Well, the Seattle Seahawks, their Achilles heel has been the tight end, defending against the tight end. There's been quite a few tight ends that have had decent days against the Seattle Seahawks. So if I was taking a chance on a tight end with a decent ticket item, it wouldn't be the Rob Gronkowski. He's a big ticket unless you want to go low on the your wide receivers, and you can always do that if you want. Me? I don't know if I want to do that. I mean, you got Demaryius Thomas at 9,100. You got Jordy Nelson at 9,000. Dez Bryant, I would take it at 9,000. I think that's a good bet. I think that Tony Romo is going to need to throw the ball because they're going to – I think DeMarco Murray is a very big ticket at 8,900. You could get better value at the running back position with Eddie Lacy at 8,400. Even Darren Herron, even though Denver is pretty good, I think Darren Herron is a pretty good bet, especially in DraftKings when they have 1 point PPR and Herron's going to be used in a passing game also. But getting back to the Patriots, wide receiver, Julian Edelman and Brandon LaFell are good bets. They are going off at a price tag of 6,800 is for Brandon LaFell, and Julian Edelman is at 7,300. And I think the better value here, I know Brandon LaFell is cheaper, but Julian Edelman is 7,300. And especially in DraftKings when it's 1 point PPR, I think he's a real good buy because I think he's going to be used a lot in the short passing game. And I think Tom Brady's going to be trying to throw a lot to him because he's his one of his safety valves. So I like him a lot. I do like him a lot. I'm not really thinking that you can take any of these two defenses in Baltimore or New England. I think the price tag is really not worth it. And let me see. The New England is 5,000. Baltimore is 4,800. Depending on how you feel about what the score is going to be, and I think the most part, people think it's going to be over 43. And you think that New England's going to outscore Baltimore. They may get to Brady and sack him a few times. I don't know about interception. Like I said, the Baltimore defense, especially in the passing game, is their weak point. Well, we'll have to wait and see, okay? Let me do this. I'm going to take a break again, and I'm going to take a little extended break. Take a pause for the cause. So this is what I'm going to do. It's going to be out of the ordinary, but I have to take a pause, and I'll be back as soon as I can.
Let's go. Ain't no room for hesitation up in here. It's time to leave it on the field, because it's game time. It's time to make your hard work pay off. Make your mom and dad proud. Make your opponent pay the price. It's time to step up and get it done, son. You go hard or you go home. From the first whistle to the last, bring it all day, every play. Because you know your boys are going to put on the line for you. They got your back, so you better have theirs. This is about the team. It's about pride. It's about who's the hungriest. So what's it going to be, man? You going to leave it on the field, or you going to leave it inside? You going to leave it or something in your tank, or you going to do what champions do? Leave nothing.
I'm the hottest, he's jumping out the coffee pot. Man, I'm just trying to get my spot like a polka dot. Lil' Chuck make my eyes and my shoulders dry. Lil' Sir, and I can make a soda pop. Keep talking, and I can make my soldiers pop. Real with me riding to the motor stop. I got the straight living out of soap op. I got it covered like a coke top. Okay. Always strapped when I hit the club. Give me dap, give me hook, and since I'm paid,
you can be mugging me, you know I'm mugging back. You can be mugging me, you know I'm always strapped. When I hit the club, give me tap, give me hook, and just some pay. You can be mugging me, you know I'm mugging back. You can be mugging me, they know I love them back.
Yeah, shorty, the last MOB, flying the Bugatti with food on them, yeah. Put the K in the car while we ride Blaze. Put the chip on the in the driveway. Bet the house on the youngin' and we got paid. Triple colors on the bike and a new Mercedes. Fucking keys on the app, how we got paid. From my tens riding high to an open bay. Uptown made man out the hallway. Crab in the bucket, pick a shot. Make a way, make a way. I thought they knew, shorty.
Like father, like
ball to your fall, stunting with them paper plates. Throwing hundreds at these hoes while we eat steak. We in the club popping bottles like Air Day. We grind for the shine, we been getting big money. Got
All right, we're back. Had to take a break there, people. We are definitely back, and we're talking about the about New England and Baltimore. And we have a caller on the line. Welcome, Lance. What's up, Lance? How you doing, my man?
What's going on, Jerry? How you doing today?
All right. I had to take a pause for the cause, man, so I had to do something. So it couldn't be stopped, so it is what it is. How you doing, man? What's up?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Wanted to call. I'm happy I called at the right time. I know a couple games a day. This is certainly the one I'm quite sure you know, everybody is focused on, no disrespect to Carolina, but I think that outcome there is going to be pretty inevitable. So I'm happy I was able to call. I just wanted to chime in on the New England-Baltimore game.
All right. I was talking about, because I've been in, and I've done this last year, and I continue the tradition of after I finished my fantasy football season, including the playoffs in fantasy football, I start to play these daily leagues. On FanDuel, and also I just signed up to do one on DraftKings to take a shot just to see what happens. I won a little bit of money doing it for the first time last year. So I said, well, what the heck, let me take a shot. I had a few winnings that I benefited from my fantasy, so I had some little money to play with. So I decided to jump in and see what I could do. I don't know if you deal with any of those websites that have these daily games and also have these playoff games up leading up. I think this is the last week for FanDuel. I'm not sure about DraftKings. But I'm talking over about going over lineups that I have and my strategy on using these guys versus just sitting and watching the games.
Sure.
Give me your thoughts about it. I don't know if you do it or not, but I've done it before and I'm trying it again.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm very aware and fond of it. I actually played myself one year. I forget what league it was through, but there has been one year where I did actually get in and see what I could make happen on a week to week basis, picking the players that are left and available in the playoffs. I think at that point, you know, it's kind of the same thing. You know, either guys are going to produce or not. I think it's extremely competitive because you only get to choose from the players that are available in the playoffs as well as everyone else. So certainly a lot of fun, you know, certainly gives people an opportunity to continue playing fantasy football on through the playoffs. I know that's something that they started, you know, within the last 10 years or so. It pretty much used to be when your fantasy season was over, that was it. But they certainly, as fantasy has grown more popular, that certainly is an option that you do have now. To play. So, no, I didn't play this year, but certainly a lot of fun. And, yeah, man, I'd be interested to see how things work out for you in the long run here.
Yeah, I've jumped into quite a few of them this week. A couple of $2 million tournaments that I'm in and some six-figure tournaments. I've taken a shot. You know, I put the – a few different lineups in and just to see if I could pick up a little, even if I don't, you know, I would like to get fortunate enough to win it. But even if I don't do that, at least I can try to pick up more than I put in, and I'll even be happy with that. You got the first prize in the $2 million tournament is $200,000, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere around there, and then the it goes down from there, like second, third, fourth, and on up until whatever they stop paying out. So even if I win some money, hopefully I can win some money to make it beneficial, and it keeps my interest. Even though I still have interest in watching the games, keeps my interest that much more. Just like when you're playing fantasy football and you're rooting for not the team, but you're rooting for certain players on the team. So it is what it is. But I was breaking down this Baltimore and New England game, since it's the first game, and I wanted to get your thoughts on the whole game. I mean, you can go on either side of the ball. You can go on both sides of the ball. Doesn't make a difference. Just give me your thoughts. Baltimore visiting New England, and who do you think, and also at the end, who do you think is going to win?
Yeah, definitely, Barry. Very intriguing matchup that we have here. These teams very familiar with each other, first and foremost. I don't remember the exact number of years, but I know these teams have played three times in the last, whatever you want to call it, 7-8 years, something like that. I think we all recall when Baltimore went in there the first time and smashed New England out in the divisional round. I think it was something like 33-14. That was the game that Ray Rice had a huge day on the ground, running for something like over 200 yards or something like that. The second time those two teams played, we all remember. I thought it was so ironic earlier this year when the Cleveland Browns decided to go with the quarterback change with Brian Hoyer over Johnny Manziel. And I recall posting on Facebook, the social networks, coming on the various shows that I do along with our show and saying that a lot of that blame needed to go to kicker Billy Cundiff, who missed some field goals. They lost to Baltimore by two. He missed two field goals in that game. They end up losing to Indianapolis by one, and he missed an easy field goal in that one. How ironic is it that this is the same Billy Cundiff that missed that easy field goal for Baltimore in New England to potentially send that game to overtime?
Right.
So the Patriots were able to barely escape Baltimore that year. That game could have went to overtime if Cundiff made an easy, like, 30-yarder. And then a couple years ago, Baltimore was able to go out and take care of business in New England to afford them a trip to the Super Bowl. So first thing that comes to mind is this is a Baltimore group that even though Ray Lewis isn't there, even though Ray Rice isn't there, even though Ed Reed isn't there, a couple other veterans as well, this is still a group that is confident. A lot of the players who were on those teams or have been a part of those games are still on there, including head coach Jim Harbaugh. So I think, first of all, Baltimore is confident. They're not going up to New England afraid. Obviously, weather is going to be something that they deal with themselves. So Baltimore, very confident group coming in. But I'm going to start right there. I think that if you look at this matchup for what it's worth, number one, when you look at New England, obviously running the football is something that they've done this year effective enough as to when they've needed to. You know, they've kind of mixed in LeGarrette Blount, Jonas Gray, Shane Vereen. We know the Patriots are a team that pretty much switch their offensive game plan weekly according to the defense that they play. So you never know who you're going to get. Outside of Jonas Gray, I know entering the end of the season, Vereen and Blount kind of nicked up. Blount with the shoulder injury, Vereen with the ankle injury. Not sure how healthy those guys are. But when you're looking at this game today for New England, you know that Baltimore's defense is one of the best units in the NFL against the run. It's been that way all year. When you have Filoti Nada, Timmy Jernigan, Elvis Dumervil, Terrell Suggs, C.J. Mosley, Courtney Upshaw, and veteran linebacker Darryl Smith, when I looked at the Ravens in the preseason, they had one of the best front sevens. I really like what they were bringing to the table. But if they're secondary, there's certainly a liability when you talk about especially having an Ed Reed back there patrolling the secondary, a guy who can get from point A to point B rather quickly. So I think that's the first matchup, Jerry, that you look at in this game is that When we've seen, you know, everybody kind of talks about Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, guys who don't have much mobility. So I don't think it's a secret for any quarterback. If you're able to get pressure on them, especially early, to where they're hearing footsteps later in the game, they're getting rid of the ball quicker than they want. You know, they're getting antsy in the pocket. We've seen Peyton Manning. We've seen Tom Brady and some other great quarterbacks get shut down when that's the circumstance. And so if New England is not able to run the football, and I don't know if that's their game plan, because, again, Baltimore's weakness is their secondary. I think they came into the playoffs maybe ranked 28th, 29th, something like that. So they get a lot of help from that front seven, creating pressure in passing situations. But their secondary is a liability. So I think that's the huge matchup that you're looking at right there is Tom Brady, Julian Edelman, Brandon LaFell, Rob Gronkowski, possibly even Shane Vereen at the backfield. Tim Wright might be a guy who steps in today and plays a major role in the situation. So I think that's the main matchup you watch out for. How New England is attempting to attack Baltimore's defense, and if the case is to where they're trying to run the football and they can't do that, will they have difficulties trying to pass? Because we know Elvis Dumervil, one of the best in the business, 19 sacks this year. Terrell Suggs on the other side with 12. You got an outstanding rookie there, C.J. Mosley. So I think that's the first matchup that I look at, Jerry, there is how does New England plan on attacking Baltimore secondary? I'm quite sure if they plan on doing it through the airways or when they have to. Tom Brady is aware that he's not that he knows he doesn't need to hold on to the football for a long period of time. I think when you flip it over to Baltimore's offense, Jerry, I think we all know. I said this last week. It comes down to Joe Flacco and what he's going to do. I think in past years, when you looked at the Patriots secondary, their weakness, the Patriots defense, their weakness without question was their secondary. If you look at the last time they went to the Super Bowl against the Giants, if you look at the when they lost to Baltimore, when you even look at last year against Denver, their secondary was always makeshift. Well, certainly New England went out this year and picked up two cornerstones there. You got Brandon Browner, was with the Legion of Boom last year, 6'4", defensive back. He's certainly, after having a little rough start, just battling some injuries and things, he's gotten into his groove. And then you have Darrelle Revis, made the All-Pro team, rightfully so. People were kind of on Revis earlier than what I was. I didn't see him quite performing at that high of a level, but I would say after like week 5 or 6, he got his feet under him. He certainly was a guy when you watched a lot of a game film, you've seen him step for step with defenders. And so I like that matchup there for New England, them especially moving Devin McCourty to safety. Now you have some guys back there in coverage that you can rely on. My question is going to be interesting is, Richard Sherman, the Seattle Seahawks, he made the All-Pro team with Darrelle Revis. Both of those guys, physical guys. Speed is not their calling card. And when you've seen Richard Sherman get beat in coverage, or in this case Darrelle Revis, it's been guys with speed. Now, I don't quite know if Torrey Smith has the speed of a DeSean Jackson, a T.Y. Hilton. You know, those are some of the receivers I've seen, even Odell Beckham Jr., you know, kind of get behind Revis or Richard Sherman. I'm kind of using the top two defensive backs in the NFL this year. So I don't know if Torrey Smith is bringing that blazing speed to the table, but he's certainly a guy who can stretch the football field. And then Steve Smith Sr., he obviously doesn't have the foot speed he used to, but he's a competitor. And so when you look at Baltimore, you know, can they run the football effectively? You know, I think no matter what, you want to try to keep Tom Brady and company off the football field as much as possible. You want to try to wear that defense down. I mean, you spoke about this earlier, Jerry. Akeem Ayers was an excellent pickup for New England, bringing him over from Tennessee. If you recall, early in the season when they lost inside linebacker Jerry Mayo for the year, that left a huge hole in their defense. By them going out and getting Akeem Ayers, nice young linebacker who I had always been high on since he came out a couple of years ago from UCLA. He's came in there and really helped them out with the run as well as dropping back in the pass. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what's Baltimore's game plan. You know, Justin Forsett up over 1,200 yards throughout the year, but tough outing last week against Pittsburgh. New England's run defense, especially with Vince Wilfork healthy, certainly going to be an issue. So, I think when you take it to the airways and you're looking at Joe Flacco, can he play mistake-free football? I think that's the key. The games we've seen, Joe Flacco throw a lot of interceptions or be inconsistent with the football. Baltimore really not a team that's built to come from behind. And so I think that's kind of the offset, Jerry. When I kind of pick up this game in a vacuum, I'm leaning towards New England. I certainly think that Baltimore has a good shot. But going out to New England and beating them for the third time in 4 years, it could have potentially been 4 out of 4. I think Bill Belichick and company are a group of guys that are saying, okay, you know, we've been to, what, 8 out of the last 13 AFC championship games. They haven't won a Super Bowl since, what, maybe 2006. You know, they've been there a couple other times, losing twice to the Giants. So I think there's a team that's continually knocking at the door. And I think if you just keep knocking and knocking and knocking, the door finally opens. The biggest thing to me, Jerry, in this one, outside of those kind of matches that I just talked about, for both teams' offenses and defenses, I think the huge advantage for New England is this one, is that those guys I just mentioned, Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, are not playing in this ball game. Those are guys that not only brought it on the football field, but you're figuring all week long in practice, the type of messages, the type of intensity, the type of leadership that those guys are bringing to the table. And then it translates over to the football field, because when Ray Lewis makes a big hit on somebody, Ed Reed gets an interception. You know, he's a guy who can take it to the house for a touchdown anytime he gets his hands on the football. And what a lot of people may not give those guys credit for, those were film guys. Those were guys that Tom Brady had to literally account for on every play, because as smart as Tom Brady is and he can read a defense, Ray Lewis is a guy who picks up on tendencies. He kind of controlled that front seven. Ed Reed, a guy, certainly, like I said, sideline to sideline, could kind of bait Tom Brady into some throws, really limited the Patriots trying to hit on the deep ball, kind of keeping things in that 10 to 15-yard radius. So, you know, I think without those two guys playing in this game, I think that Tom Brady has a little more of an edge now, because he his main concern now is he can get the protection on the outside against Suggs and Doomerville. He should have time to deliver again against a secondary that's very unproven, amongst the worst this year. I just think that Baltimore has a lot more work to do in order to win this ball game. Can they win it? Without question. But I think that this is Tom Brady and company's time. I think they realized last year they lost in that AFC championship game. And those couple things I just mentioned to you, playing without Rob Gronkowski last year, their secondary not being fully loaded the way it is this year, I think ultimately those are the differences. I would probably be leaning, Jerry, towards New England 27, Baltimore 20, somewhere in that price range. I know the weather is going to be a factor. It's going to be cold, so it could end up being, you know, maybe 24 to 17, somewhere in there. But I think New England winning this game by 7 to 10 points is reasonable. But, again, would I be shocked to see Baltimore win? No. But I think they have way more to do than New England. I think New England set up with home field advantage. They've been off for 2 weeks. We know Bill Belichick, when he has this much time to plan against rivals, he does a great job there. New England does have that winning streak against AFC teams, although it is regular season. So I just think it's the Patriots' time. I think those upgrades they made at defensive back, along with the Ravens' secondary being vulnerable. And I think that Baltimore, you know, again, if they can't run the football and become one-dimensional, I think that the cornerbacks and Brown and Revis can hold up in coverage. So I'm leaning towards New England in this ball game.
Okay. I have a tendency to agree with you. And for all the points that you you brought out, and I'm not going to go over them, I'm going to move on to the other game, which I find very interesting. I know a lot of people say this is probably going to be the worst game of the weekend because of these two teams and their limit or how they limit it on the offensive side on both of them. And since Carolina's picked up the defense, that only piques my interest that much more, because the fact is, in Seahawks won in Carolina 13-9 in week 8. And now they're going to be playing in Seattle. And these two teams that have played each other have a tendency to play close games and basically low-scoring games. And I know that the line is like 10 or 11 points, give or take. give or take. And most people are thinking that because of what Carolina did last week against the Cardinals, that Seattle with a just as better defense, a better defense, and playing at home with the 12th man, that is inept that Carolina was last week, that Cam Newton will have to play better, and they're not thinking that he will play better. But these two teams, in my opinion, are mirror images of each other because they run the football. And and right now, in the last few weeks, Carolina, on a 4 or 5 game winning streak, has been playing better defense. So I'm thinking, I'm not thinking, I don't like Carolina to win this game, but I'm thinking this game is going to be a pretty close game, a low-scoring game. I think Cam Newton is going to be called on to do a lot, and the passing game is probably the only going to be the way that they're going to be able to move the ball with any effectiveness since Bobby Wagner, Bobby Wagner's come back. The running game, the running defense in the Seattle Seahawks has been a lot stouter. I'd have to think that the only way that the Carolina is going to possibly have a chance is if Cam Newton somehow has an epiphany and is able to pass the ball a lot better than he did last week. He definitely has to do that. And the defense has to come to play against the Seattle offense. The Carolina's defense has to come up big against Seattle's offense, which is really not that dynamic and not that explosive. So I would just want to get your thoughts on what you think about the this game. I'm really interested to see if Carolina can go in there with nothing to lose, and probably hopefully Ron lets it all hang out try to at least scare Seattle, if not upset them. Talk to me.
Yeah, definitely. I'll say first thing you mentioned it, Jerry. The latest line I heard was 11. I know that, like you said, depending on source, it can switch. It is 10 to 11. That is for sure. So in there, from a betting standpoint, or when you're looking at the point spread, double digits, especially 11, that's always a number that you have to respect because that's very realistically, Seattle could win that game 24-13. And we all know on the point spread that it goes to the house if there's a push. And so if it's a 24-13 game, that's tied up when you add the 11 on it. So you got to respect the double digits in that ball game first and foremost. But looking at this one from a pure football standpoint, I still think that you have to like Seattle, and you are tending to think that they can cover that 11. When I look at this game, Jerry, as you mentioned, these teams being mirror images of each other. I want to say this, for Carolina. We've been seeing how hot they've been down the stretch, the headline. Carolina on the 5-game tear. Carolina's rolling. Carolina's on this win streak. Carolina's the hot thing. I've seen some of ESPN. Carolina's the hottest team. And I'm saying, look, let's pump our brakes. Let's slow down for a minute. Let's take a look at what these 5 games that Carolina has won. Let's take a look at the teams they are before we start getting a little too besides ourselves. They didn't do anything but beat a under 500 team in New Orleans, a under 500 team in Tampa Bay, at the time a 500 team in Cleveland with Manziel. We know the circus that was going on there at the time, under 500 team in Atlanta, and then basically a Cardinals team that featured a third-string quarterback and a third-string running back. So, as much as that 5-game winning streak is true, and I don't want to take anything away from Carolina because you got to come out and win football games, the teams they beat, none of those teams really were playing good football at the time. And one thing that has not changed about Carolina is their offensive line, even though the guys, of course, as the years went on, has gotten better. As we talked about, Jerry, I think we laughed at that once it came out about week 9 or 10 or so, something like that, that Carolina had been playing a lot of time this season with up to 4 undrafted free agents on that offensive line. Which was making life miserable for Cam Newton during that 6-game losing streak. What you do like about Carolina is they finally went to John Stewart. I know that he has had trouble battling injuries all his career, but he's always, to me at least, been the better running back out there in Carolina beside D'Angelo Williams. But I know that one offseason they signed both of those guys to multi-year contracts, so they've kind of had no choice but to keep Williams in the loop as well. But since they featured Jonathan Stewart, running game has certainly picked up. When you look at Carolina passing the football, you still have Calvin Benjamin and Greg Olsen. But I think that's, you know, really where Carolina found himself in trouble in that six-game losing streak. And if it wasn't for, again, these losing teams, you know, all those teams, you know, New Orleans and Tampa Bay and Cleveland, all those teams were really struggling at the time on both sides of the football. Carolina's defense picking things up is really the biggest reason for this turnaround. It certainly wasn't like their offense has come to life and been lighting up the scoreboard. It's really been their defense causing turnovers and really locking things down to help them. But Carolina's offense is very limited. Jonathan Stewart, I know last week we seen Fonzie Whitaker pop out of the blue for that screen pass for a touchdown. But when you're looking at the Carolina Panthers running game against Seattle, not a good matchup. And then when Cam Newton has to throw the football, we know Calvin Benjamin is his main target on the outside, not a speed guy. So certainly someone that Seattle's secondary can keep up with throughout the course of the game. Then you have Greg Olsen. I think that is their biggest hope. I don't know if Carolina uses or has another tight end with some good speed in hands, but I think, from a weapon standpoint, they're just limited. You're looking at Seattle's defense, and really Seattle's defense was playing good all year. It's just earlier in the season, they were doing some things we hadn't seen them do. Number one, they were missing a lot of open field tackles. The tackling wasn't sure enough. When you look at the running game, I think that's certainly something that made some changes, because you're figuring they lost, Red Bryant, a defensive tackle. They lost, Chris Clemens. So you're losing two big beasts there on that front line in the offseason in Jacksonville. And then they lost defensive tackle Brandon Mebane. And so that, they had to kind of get that front line back together. Teams not being able to run on Seattle was something that was in place. And then you mentioned Bobby Wagner was out. So once Seattle, and then they weren't getting the turnovers. And so once they got their defensive line together, you're seeing Seattle get back to stopping the run. They got back when, like you said, when Bobby Wagner got back into the lineup, it seemed like he spread like cancer throughout that defense, right? Because now everybody was making sure the tackles they were missing, you know, the 4-yard gains that were turning into 9 and 10 yards and things of that right. nature. You didn't see that anymore, stopping guys in their tracks, and then they start manufacturing the turnovers. So tough matchup today. You know, I think it's great for us to see Cam Newton, what he's made of. We've certainly, I don't think there's never a time you can completely count a team out. It's any given Sunday, but this is a great challenge for Cam Newton. The numbers just don't stack up in his favor, though. Like I said, if you look at Seattle ending the year, I think they were maybe fourth in the NFL against the run, besides DeMarco Murray for the Dallas Cowboys this year. The seven other teams that went out to Seattle, those running backs averaged 30 yards running the football. And then the funny thing with Seattle is on most teams, it's either or. Either the teams are good against the run, like Baltimore, good against the run, good against getting pressure, but a weak secondary, or bad against the run in a good secondary. Well, for Seattle, when they stop you running, now you're playing into their hands, because they had to end the season with the second-ranked pass defense. Very difficult right. trying to pass the football on Richard Sherman, Errol Thomas, those guys back there. Like I said, if you don't have speed guys, that's the only time I've really seen Richard Sherman get beat this year. DeSean Jackson and the Washington Redskins. I remember last year when Seattle went out to Indianapolis and lost. It was T.Y. Hilton getting behind that secondary for a couple long touchdowns. So without Carolina having anybody who can really stretch the football field, Benjamin can certainly do that with his leaping ability. I think we remember when these two teams played earlier this year. Seattle was able to win that game 13-9. But Benjamin went up over Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas. Got the ball at his highest point of the year. Spectacular 45-yard play. So, as you mentioned, Carolina's going to have to do something unique, something creative. They're going to have to really just kind of lay it all on the line today. Come in with your basic offense. It's not going to get it done against Seattle. On the flip side of the ball, for me, about Seattle, it always boils down to can you get them out of their comfort zone? You know, if you can't get a lead on Seattle, which a lot of times is the problem, because even if their offense is having a hard time getting the wheels turning, their defense is constantly getting three and outs and constantly giving them good field position and basically not allowing offenses to put a ton of points up on the board, Seattle doesn't have to come too far to their comfort zone normally. They can continue running the football. When you look at that, that's the one imposing figure you see from Seattle is in the trenches. Number one in the NFL. Rushing the football this year between Marshawn Lynch and Russell Wilson. You're averaging about 175 rushing yards a game. That's flat out punching teams in the mouth. And then defensively, you're only giving up about 60, 70 running yards. So very difficult when they're dominating the trenches, but you got to get them out of their comfort zone. And that calls for getting ahead. Russell Wilson is certainly a quarterback who can throw the football. He proved that to us this year. But it's not conventional. Most of Russell Wilson's big plays come on broken plays, and it's certainly not a disrespect because any time that you can break outside of the pocket and now you're causing the angles and the windows to open up in the secondary, now you got players. I mean, let's face it, Antonio Brown of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Randall Cobb of the Green Bay Packers, both of those guys make big plays once the initial plays break down in the pocket and Big Ben and Aaron Rodgers get to scrambling and those guys can get behind secondary. So it's certainly not a slight to Russell Wilson, but he's not a guy who's traditionally, and he really doesn't have the weapons on the outside to really just sit back in the pocket and kill you. He does a lot of damage when he gets to scrambling because he's such a dual threat. So, you know, Carolina's defense has played much better. I think that is the interesting matchup to see how this one plays out. When those teams did play, these were two different teams at the time. But Seattle, Marshawn Lynch only had about 65 rushing yards in that first game at Carolina. But it was at a time where we don't know exactly what was going on at that point in the season, Jerry. But if you remember, maybe that three-game stretch where Lynch was only getting about 10 to 12 carries a game would have certainly, right, you know, kicked it back up to 20 plus. So you got to go with Seattle in this one. I mean, it's in Seattle. You're figuring these guys are going to be fired up. And when you just look at Carolina's offense, they just really don't have the firepower to really cause any true threats. I mean, if you look at what Seattle's done in these last 5 to 6 games where they're only giving them 6 points, I mean, they played the Eagles. But I think the 49ers, the Cardinals, you know, teams that they've played and seen, it's going to be similar. I mean, let's face it, if Calvin Benjamin is not open on the outside, you basically got one other guy who can win in one-on-one matchups being Greg Olsen. If you can't run the football, Cam Newton's another guy passing from the pocket. He just hasn't got there yet. Again, he can certainly be a good passer, but a lot of time, erratic, inaccurate, seems to still have a little bit of trouble learning when to take a little bit off the football and things of that nature. So if you look past Benjamin, I mean, guys like Jericho Cotchery and I forget this other Caucasian. I'm not trying to be racist. I just don't know his name. It's number 11. He's a white guy, number 11. He's out there for him playing the slot. Just not a lot of weapons. So I think it's going to need – Carolina's going to need a lot of turnovers. I mean, they're going to have to basically come out and play a perfect football game, including – opening to have an off day from Russell Wilson and company. I mean, that's really what it boils down to for me. A couple games that Seattle lost this year, I remember the one at home against Dallas. Look, these guys are human, and as well as they play, it was just an off day for Russell Wilson. I think he only had about 175 passing yards. However, it worked out, and I think it was because Dallas was able to sustain some drives. You know, you want to keep Marshawn Lynch and these guys off the field. I think Dallas was able to sustain drives, put up some points to where when Russell Wilson, those guys got in and some three and outs were taking place, it wasn't a case where it was a three and out for Dallas and then Seattle's back on the field. Those guys had to sit on the sidelines 4 or 5 minutes to chew up some clock. So it just doesn't look good, Jerry. Like I said, when you look at this matchup, if Seattle comes in and continues to do what they've been doing and what we've come accustomed to from them over the last couple of years since they've really made a charge to the top of the NFL, it's going to be difficult for Carolina to manufacture points, and I think that's where the problem ultimately will come in. I don't see Carolina, unless they, again, forcing turnovers, getting easy field position, perhaps running the punt back, a kickoff, penalties. I mean, they're going to need a hell of a lot to happen, and I just don't see them being able to muster up more than, you know, 13, possibly 16 points, depending on, again, field position and how Russell Wilson that offense played. But when you go just straight X's and O's and you look at the personnel that Carolina has, they just don't stack up well. It's just not a good situation for Cam Newton and company to be going into play right now. So I think you go with Seattle, and I think that 24-13, you know, marked is what I'm looking at. And like I said, that's very interesting, Jerry, because the line is 10 or 11, and that's pushing it right to the brink.
Yep. And two more tidbits. The last time they met, Greg Olsen only had one catch for 16 yards. The other one is Star Luele, their defensive lineman.
Yes. Yes.
He's out. He's not going to be playing. He's one of their best players on the defensive line.
Yes,
I have to agree with you. I'm just laying out the information that I see. I find it very interesting that for the most part people are dismissing this game as a no-brainer, and I understand the reasoning because of the way Carolina was playing that game. But when I was watching it, and I have to bring this point up because I was a little very irritated with Carolina because the play calling in that game, and Mike Shula happens to be the offensive coordinator, who I've never liked as an offensive coordinator or a play caller, and that's the son of Don Shula. I think he's absolutely horrible. The play calling and the coaching in that game, the way they called the play and the way they handled that game looked like they were just trying to lose that game. And doing everything wrong to, in order for Arizona to win that game. I'd have to think that it could be a bad game on the team itself, including the coaching with all the foopahs that were going on, that they're going to show up and give a better show against a team that they know they have to versus a team that I think they pretty much knew that as long as they didn't get too far behind because of especially the quarterback play, I'm talking about the Arizona Cardinals, that they had pretty much figured they would win that game and didn't come in with the same intensity that they're going to come in playing the Super Bowl champions, the number one seed in the NFC, and a team that mirrors them. So we'll have to wait and see. And let me put it this way. There's one other thing. I told you that Greg Olsen only had one catch in Week 8 for 16 yards the last time they met. Well, over the last 4 to 5 games at least, the weakest link of the Seattle Seahawks in the passing game was defending the tight end. So I'm looking for Greg Olsen, even though he didn't have a good showing in Week 8 against the Seattle Seahawks in Carolina. I think Cam Newton's going to get to him involved early and often in this game because of, I think, besides him being a tight end, him being in the middle of the field, he's going to need to get the ball out of his hands as quick as possible because of the Seattle pass rush. Greg Olsen is going to be in the middle of the field, like I said, and he is one of his options, like you said, one of his favorite options. So, but there's a lot of variables. There's a lot of things going on in this game that could tilt it one way or the other, but I do believe that Seattle is going to win the game. But I don't think it's going to cover. I don't think they're going to cover the spread, to tell you the truth. And like you said, the spread is up against the line. Your prediction is up against the line of what the spread is. But we'll be waiting to see because that's the late game, the 8:30 or 8 o'clock game, whatever it is. And hopefully people haven't gone out to party versus sitting down and watching this game after they watch the Baltimore-New England game. Figure this is a fait accompli. So, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. you know that. So.
Yeah, I think, Jerry, I think without question, I think they're going to see a huge rating. I think this is a game until, you know, people can see in the second half. You know, I think that, you know, the third quarter, I think this is a game that a lot of people, outside of people who just purely enjoy football, or like you said, you're sitting around the house or with friends, I think this is definitely a game that most people will keep track of. kind of by word of mouth. You know, there's enough social media. People can look into their phone. They can just throw it on there for a minute. So I think until people see third quarter and maybe it's a game, like you said, the NFL going to see their drop off pretty dramatic from the first game. To the second game until Carolina proves they can keep it a ball game. I think most people are going to keep up with this one while they're busy doing some other things. Also wanted to mention real quick, too, before I get out here, Jerry. In that first game, I think that's a game that Carolina should have won, too, if I'm not mistaken. I know for a fact Kelvin Benjamin dropped a touchdown, and I believe that Carolina came out of that red zone within a 10-yard line, maybe having to kick two field goals instead of get touchdowns. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I think that was a game that Carolina should have won in the regular season, did not win it. I think it's just completely two different ball clubs right now, just an overmatched Carolina team this week.
All right, we come to the conclusion. I want to appreciate you, my man, for calling in. Tomorrow we will not have a show. I'm going to be running a replay. I got an obligation, and besides that, I'm going to be watching these games also later in the afternoon, so I won't be around. Next show would be the 8 o'clock show on Thursday, which is the FSP Crew show. Tune in. We'll be recapping about the games that took place this past weekend or this weekend. And we'll be back here on Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where Victor will be back. I will be co-hosting. And also next Sunday, I will be back on the Master Plan, where we will be looking at who's going to play for the AFC and NFC Championship. And with a chance to get into the Super Bowl, this is an exciting weekend because it's going to come down to four teams next weekend, and then that eventually will go to the who's going to compete for the Super Bowl. Like I said, Lance, you got anything before we get out of here?
No, good talking with you again. Happy I was able to come on the air in time and talk some X's and O's with you. So no problem, man. Thanks for having me on the show. And that's it, man. Just hope everybody enjoys a great day of football. As always, just drop my tags real quick. Follow me on Twitter at NFL Exporter or Facebook.com/NFL Exporter. Spelling for both of those, NFLEXP. O-R-T-E-R. Other than that, man, just looking forward to, like you, seeing how these games shake out. And best of luck to you in your individual fantasy matchups today.
I'll keep in touch and let you know if I hit the lottery or
bring it home. There's nothing bad with that, man. If you can, that's the best thing about playing. Go, I'm all for you, man. Go ahead and bring that $2 million. I need a loan.
All right, my man. I'll be talking to you. Everyone out there, tune in next week. We're out of here. Bye.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.
Get ready to rumble.
You want to talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics.